Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon.
Hello and
Ah,
welcome.
so we just posted a tweet saying how we had some audio issues. I have very screwy setup for my audio, and I was able to fix it. I was a little scared that we'd have to cancel the show because I didn't know what I did. And we're here now, and of course, in usual fashion, we had I wasn't the stream wasn't muted that I had open, so there's always something. It's always something to happen. This week we're gonna be talking about the Root of Nightmares, Root of Nightmares, the Nezarek raid lore book in Spiral. This book has a bunch of entries that kind of look back on past entries and gives us a little bit of a new light in them, with them, particularly a number of beings that we've only heard about in lore seem to have been aligned with the darkness, which is very surprising.
Yeah, that's a little wicked.
So yeah, this week we are kind of unusually just going to be reading these entries and then talking about them because they're very good entries and they're very good entries and I think it'd be best if they were just simply read, not just summarized. And because of that, and the number of entries that there are, this might be a two-parter episode. And I think it's a good one. I think it's a really good book. I think it'll be worth doing two parts for.
Yeah,
So.
there's a lot of meat on the bone on this one. Well, and the good thing about this is this book is really kind of dealing with the main meat of what Destiny is. So it's pretty important.
Yeah. We won't get to it until, if it is a two-parter, we won't get to it until the next episode. But in the back end of this book, reading it with the knowledge of who the witness is has like a whole new like meaning to it. It makes a lot more sense, learning that the witness is not the winnower and that like really cementing the metaphor of the flower game, that it wasn't an actual event that happened, that it was a metaphor for how the witnesses' kind of religious take on the universe came to be.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
I assume the lore card this week is the weapon I can't pronounce.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay. So, why don't we do that now and then we'll just get right into the book. So, brought to you by Destiny Armory Defined is our weekly lore card.
Okay, so this lore card is the Vised Ornament for Wicked Implement. It's a scout rifle that you get from the Season of the Deep dungeon. Wait, is that right? Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a
Sort of.
two-parter.
Yeah.
Wait, no, not the dungeon.
No,
From deep
the
dives.
deep dives,
But
yes.
it
Because you
is
have
still
to.
kind of a two-parter because you got to do the fishing.
Right. There you go. You do a lot of fishing, you do the deep dive a bunch of times, and then you go back and do the deep dive after you've gotten a specific fish that gives you a broken blade. And then you go and give it to the hive statue and the light down in the deep dive, and then once you've triggered that, it unlocks the main thing where you go and get it, which it's kind of hard, man. It's pretty hard to do.
I have not done it. I have no rush to get it done.
Nobody likes the scout rifle, just FYI. Well, it doesn't appear that many people like it. I heard it doesn't do enough of the thing it should do.
Yeah,
So,
being a weapon that is like, isn't it like precision hits cause slow?
right. And then so you get the slow, but then you don't have enough bullets to keep doing the slow, so you undo the slow, because now you've got to reload because the slow is
Mm.
over. And then you know how they have a timer that ticks on just about everything now? Yeah, it just doesn't pay off. So unless you have like mega fast reload and are constantly hitting one hits. And then that's the other thing is like on red bars, if you're powerful, they just die within one or two shots. So that does off. And then most yellow bars have either shields or elemental things or whatever. So it doesn't really give them a slow. And then bosses, they don't care.
I mean,
So
on paper, it's
it's
a
like,
really powerful gun because it's like, oh, well, it
and
can
then,
slow. That's beneficial. It's a scout rifle. That's really good, you
right.
know.
Yeah, and then in Crucible, it's your the time to kill in Crucible is so ramped up when you're getting team shot that unless you're 1v1 in somebody, there's no way that this thing will ever pay off for you.
I
You know what I
almost,
mean? So
yeah. I almost wish it was a linear fusion because if it was a special ammo weapon, it could have done a more efficient job triggering these effects.
yeah, that would have been cool. Like it could have been like a arbalest.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, like it's gonna freeze you in like two headshots, but
That's
it's a
cool.
linear fusion. So it's like, okay, one slow, two freeze, then three shatters. And it's like, so slow, freeze, shatter, three shots. Things are gonna fall down with that. You know, you get the additional damage. It's a really cool concept. I just maybe it just
I
needs a
mean,
buff.
it even looks a lot like a linear fusion, or it looks, I don't know. Who knows
I still think it's
what's
a
going
linear
on?
fusion because it does. It
Like
really
they.
does look like one.
It does. Okay, so getting that out of the way, the cool thing I'll mention at the very end of all of this, but the cool thing kind of makes you go, So anyway, the name of the vice ornament for Wicked Implement is Agkistrodon. Say it again, it's Agkistrodon. So that word is a Greek word and it means fish hook. And if you look at the weapon, it kind of has like a fish hook shape to it. You'd kind of have to imagine the hook being backwards, though. So the Greek, when you break it down from Agkistrodon, the Greek word is ank or ankhistrodon, and that very much means fish hook. And then it's also Agkistrodon or Agkistron, which means hook, and odon or fang or tooth. Also, they used to make fish hooks out of bone. So that's an interesting fact.
That is
Back in
interesting.
the day. Yeah. I mean, they didn't use a lot of malleable metals that were malleable metals way back in the day weren't really hard enough. So primitive hooks were made out of bone a lot of times. Or weapons in general were made out of bones, duh. But anyway, so the other cool thing about it is this word is synonymous with a genus of deadly venomous semi-aquatic to terrestrial pit
Jeez.
vipers with specialized hooked fangs. So, what does that mean? Well, an Agkistrodon is a genus of venomous pit vipers, and the term Agkistrodon has its roots in ancient Greek. So, this is comprised of two words, which means hook or barb or translates to tooth or fang. So when they combine the two words, it represents the most defining feature of this particular genus of snake, which they all share. And it's these hooked fangs, which are kind of a marvel of evolution, and they're vital to the survival and hunting techniques of this Agkistrodon snake. So Agkistrodon snakes have these specialized fangs where they inject venom into their prey. It swiftly immobilizes or kills them before they consume it. And the venom also acts as a potent defense mechanism against potential threats. This enables the snakes to effectively ward off predators. The Agkistrodon genus comprises of several notable species found across diverse geographical regions. In North America, the genus includes the elusive water moccasins or cotton mouths. And the striking copperheads. So if you're familiar with snakes at all or you've heard any of these names, you might be familiar with your territory depending on where you're from. But these are all in the same genus. And so If you ever wondered about moccasins and thinking about how do they swim and can they bite, but they swim and all of these things you've heard growing up about snakes, all of these snakes in one way or another can swim. So even the cottonmouth that you would see in like a really dry climate or dry area, if there's a body of water, it can definitely go across it. What's also cool is in East Asia, this family of snakes encompasses the Asian pit vipers, and that's basically the Echistrodon hales and the Echistrodon intermedius. Both species embodies this unique characteristic, where they share a common trait of the venomous fangs, and their habitats are similar. But what's neat about all of these snakes, and I really kind of honed in on, and it's the season of the deep, duh. So, there's a lot of water, aquatic things, is these snakes are all semi-aquatic to terrestrial, and they're often found near sources of water. However, one particular snake, the Contortrix, and the I guess you say a Balaenoetus, they're found in dry habitats, far away from streams and ponds. However, they all swim. So back to their venom, one bite can inject enough venom into a human to cause severe pain, swelling, weakness, difficulty breathing, hemorrhaging, gangrene, fever, vomiting, and in rare instances, even death. So it's proper identification of these snakes is really important for researchers and enthusiasts. You got to be able to recognize their distinct features, and of course, be respectful because they share the habitat and they're very important for the ecosystem. But this etymology of the word echistrodon really kind of illustrates the interconnectedness of language, history, the natural world, and it highlights how the Greeks had this ability to use descriptive terms to encapsulate and provide a deep insight and meaning into words. So what I think is really interesting about this particular word for this gun, which we all know Vaist is very proud of naming all of their weapons after venomous creatures or serpents or I would say like reptiles that have that are threatening reptiles, I guess is what you would say Vaist likes to name their weapons after.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because if they were just going after venomous animals, where's our like platypus for like a shotgun or something?
You maybe we'll get one. We'll get a glaive and it's just a tail.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Well, so if you so here's what I dialed in on, and this was kind of after I'd already threw it out there. I've been waiting for this ornament forever, and just because we didn't have a name for it, we had the leaks when the image came out, and I saw something that was really cool. And so on this particular weapon, if you look at the side of it, you'll notice that it's got like this bulbous feature to it. Even on Wicked Implement, it's got the same thing. The most obvious thing that you notice when you first look at it, even on Wicked Implement, is how the gun's shape, if you kind of ignore certain parts of it, how the overall gun shape looks very much like a hook. But to go even further, if you look at a snake's skeleton or skull, it looks like the upper half of a snake's jaw. And if you follow that arc line down to the upper fang and it hooks around, this weapon very much looks like the overall shape of the top of a snake's head. And then the fang would be the hooked part that comes down around. And so now you've got this other piece that's in the way on the gun. But if you look at it, it is very much the venom sac that would be in the snake's jaw. And so whether you say, okay, well the I guess the tubular part that goes into the fang, it's actually pointed the opposite way, like at your enemy. And so it's almost like you've got the head of a snake, with the hook fang right at your trigger, but then the venom sac has been turned around to shoot at your enemy or to point towards your enemy. And so I thought that was a really cool visual cue for this weapon, seeing as they used that word and Kistredon on the vice ornament. Because when you look at Wicked Implement by itself, without any knowledge of Kistredon, Wicked Implement, the word, the lore behind it, none of it makes any sense. It doesn't even look like, and you look at the weapon, you're like, wow, that's just like a really cool bone looking weapon. Well, I don't even know what that's for. So that makes me wonder, like, what are they saying? We get it from the deep, it's a product of fighting against Zivu or Wrath, and now we've got this venom feature, and now we've got this bone feature. And so it's really cool because we know of two things. We know of Ossa, but we also know of the Leviathan, and we also know of the ominous snake creature. And so, like, there's all of these little things out there that kind of tie in with words. And so if you can imagine some like big snake type of monster, Leviathan, sea serpent, whatever, it would be pretty cool to know that, hey, maybe we're using the fang of this creature at one time, or a shapeshifter. Anyway, that was that. Oh, and it's got a cool RGB effect.
Oh, does it?
Yeah,
That's cool.
when you're using it, you know how we have we can turn the weapons 360 now in game, and they added the effects that the guns do, so it's pretty cool. So like, if you turn this weapon around, you can see there's like these striations and veins that run down both Wicked Implement and this one, but there's this, it changes through all the different RGB colors.
That's awesome. It one
It's pretty
thing
cool.
though about this that kind of makes me wonder is, and maybe it's not about this weapon so much, because when I hear about this weapon, it really makes me like want snake people like as an enemy race to fight. And because that would be really cool. And it makes me think, like, what comes after Final Shape? Like, what comes after the Light and Dark Saga? And I feel like one of the things that need to happen, like genuinely need to happen, are entirely new models of enemies. Like, not, oh, well, they're Cabal, but they're Shadow Legion Cabal, so they have special, or they're Red Legion Cabal, so they have special, or they're SIVA Fallen, or they're Scorn, they're Taken, where it takes an existing model and kind of builds off of it, but a truly new enemy race. And, I feel like snake people is a great. I keep noticing chat and it pauses my brain. So sorry about that. Snake people would be a really fun one, and I think this book is a perfect example of that, because I think it's the first. Yeah, it's the first and third entry of this book. It looks back at races that Oryx and his siblings decimated. Specifically the Ecumen, which sounded kind of like not a race so much as a UN of various races, and the
Right on.
Kugu and the Kugu, who were a race that not they this is funny though that it's coming back right now. We're talking about it right now as Pikmin 4 is coming out, because they sound like a plant race, which would be also awesome. Like living sentient plant creatures. That's
Interesting.
that'd be a great thing to fucking fight. Because as it stands right now, we're in the Light and Dark Saga. We're fighting the players of the Light and Dark Saga. Why are the Cabal here? Well, Zivu destroyed their planet. The conquest, they got wrapped up in it. Gaul wanted the light, heard the legends of the Traveler, etc. Why are the Hive here? That one's pretty self-explanatory. Why are the Vex here? Gets an answer in this lore book. I think it's gonna be part two of this two-part episode, likely a two-part episode. Unless we can like really fucking get into these. And then why are the Fallen here? Another very easy one. They were blessed by the Traveler, chased out by the Witness, and I also believe Savathun? Oryx?
Hmm.
Do you remember which hive was there? One of the hive was at Reese during its destruction. I think it was
Yeah, I don't.
Oryx.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Whoa, okay.
no, it was
Yeah, that
Oryx. I
would
remember because when we learned that Savathun was at our collapse, Zeevo was at the
Yes.
Cabal's, Savathun was at ours,
Yes.
and Oryx was at the
That's right. And
Fallen's.
Oryx was at the Fallens. Yes,
Yeah.
because the whirlwind.
Yeah.
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 Damn it. Yes, because we knew also, well, we had a hint from D1
Yeah,
because one
that
of the raid weapons had a Fallen
Chalcas.
character.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Chokas.
But I mean,
Holy shit.
that could have been picked up
I never
anywhere.
thought of that. I never thought of that.
To answer Manuel's question, he took the Kell of House of Stone, right? I'm not sure if we know he took Chalcas, but the implication was that the Chalcas was used to create the chitin that created the scout rifle Doom of Chalcas, and you
Yeah.
would do that by grinding him up to bits, little tiny bits.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
I probably would rather be taken.
And so what we know now about the witness is the witness race, the race that is the witness learned to calcify things. And so the chitin is like the
Interesting.
hive's the chitin is the hive's version of trying to calcify everything. And we even know of the calcified fragments, which have to do with the Books of Sorrow, which tell the story of the hive.
And let me tell you, because I'm confident we're not going to get through this whole book today. Read it yourself. It's ishtar-collective.net. The lore book is in Spiral. If you haven't run the raid and have it in game or just want to read it on a website, which is much on your phone, which is much nicer, this book is referencing everything we are talking about right now. It references calcified fragments. It references how the hive emulate the witness. All the little things. This book really gets into it. And
Yeah.
I want to like jump ahead and be like, yeah, it said that right here. But like, let's, and
Let's go,
that's,
yeah.
yeah, that's why it's like, nope. Let's read this in order. Let's take it entry by entry and let the book speak for itself, because it's a really good one. So, we can take turns. I can read them all. Whatever you think is the best. But
Yeah,
at the very
go for
least,
it.
I'll go first. The first entry here is the habitable world, and this one is narrated by one of the Ecumen. As I mentioned earlier, I don't believe Ecumen is a race. It's more like how the Cabal consist of the Cabal, the Scions, the Arkborn, the Sindhu.
Right.
You know, they're
Yeah.
all their own races, but they exist under Cabal. Not
Right.
that we see any of the later ones that I listed off. So,
Which I you know, that makes the Cabal unique though.
well, I mean, n
Because they're
no,
com
because of the
yeah.
Ecumen.
Yeah.
It made them unique
Yeah.
for half a second.
Right. That's what I mean.
So, a dream of worlds in unity, millennia gone by, alien and familiar all at once. It leaves behind a data fragment to mark its passing. Record, grief effusion. After the informant had come, bringing reports of the end of the Ammonite by the sword of the festering hive, we did not yet know disaster. Unusual signals at the edge of our habitable world suddenly had meaning. The intelligence thrice over credible enough to mobilize, and yet those at the core of our united Ecumen did not know the scent of fear. After all, it was to be understood that they would fall. The Ammonite were only one, not a unity, divided. Meanwhile, our habitable world always grew. We offered the fathomless deep to any who wished to learn of our synergy, and it glossed the way to become more than we were. The day the war began, I was far from disaster. There was celebration. A new client species drank of the deep and understood the world as we tasted it. Our joy marked the air, and all of us shared it, for we were now Ecumen. Welcome, welcome. What could bitter such a thing? Sunrise scents were long fading when I read the first report of strife, though delight lingered sweet on my breath. Buoys offline, sentinels unresponsive, a first strike, a lingering scent that we could not understand, though the deep indicated familiarity. From our beacons, Ayat. Ayat. I set this day in memory above all others. Enact. Remember. It has been long and long since the war began. The habitable world shrinks by the moment. We know not what the future holds, but the crisis and fear. I set this day in memory so that we will know. When the lessons are taught in some warless future, but true in the fragile hope all of us shelter. Fear did not come suddenly. The first harbingers of violence arrived on the same winds as joy. That of value must be cherished, for it may already be too late. In the deep may we be kept. And so, yeah. The Ecumen, as I said, we already knew about them. We knew about them since D1. They were practically like a footnote in the Books of Sorrow. They served a good purpose. So to summarize what happened with the Ecumen, Hive come in. This is when it was Oryx, the Taken King. They came in. They beat the Ecumen back. They had not known fear, as it was said in this entry. They had not known fear. The Ecumen were like, oh shit, they got pushed back. But the Ecumen was very strong, and they had a really good defense. And because of that, the Hive started to lose. They couldn't feed their worms fast enough. They had no chance. And that's what inspired the Hive princes, Oryx, Savathun and Zivor-Arrath, to concoct their plan that Oryx would kill both Zivu and Savathun. And Zivu like leapt to that, which is so, like, it was so obvious what her mentality was all the way back then, but we really see it now in Ghost of the Deep's dungeon. And yeah. It's crazy how they really set in maybe they didn't plan it, but someone was like, oh yeah, that's her energy, like absolute fanatical, cherishes Oryx, you know. And they kept that through years later. And so Oryx kills his sisters and then goes to see Akka, comes out as Oryx, the Taken King. And with Oryx being the Taken King, he fights the Ecumen for 100 years. At the end of those 100 years, he killed the Ecumen Council and of the Fractal Reef. And from their blood rose Zivor-Arrath, saying, I am war, and you have conjured war back with me. And then they fought the Ecumen for 40 years. And at the end of those 40 years, Oryx said to the Dekua Nest, listen, I am jealous of my sibling Zivu. Help me kill her. And in desperation, they agreed. But he drove the Dekua Nest into a trap, and they were made extinct. From their ashes rose cunning Savathun, saying, I am trickery, and you have conjured me back with trickery. Before the Hive actually reached the Ecumen, they were already saying Ayat. They were worshiping the deep. So what it sounds like is the Hive were following the pyramid ships. They were following the witness. The witness came and said, I am your salvation. The Ecumen said, yes, I am on board. And then here come the Hive and wipe them out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's interesting because, well, you know, to define it for people who may or may not understand the Books of Sorrows all that much, is that in order for Oryx to become Oryx, and defeat the Ecumen, he had to kill his sisters, and the only way to bring them back was to use what their sisters are known for to bring them back. So. Mm-hmm. By inviting the Ecumen to come back and, you know, take, basically destroy Zivu, that brought her back because she feeds off war. And then in order to bring Savathun back, the whole trick of making the Ecumen go try to get Zivu brought Savathun back because it was a lie.
Yeah.
So it's like this terrible loop between the three, and how they work and how they operate and why they were so powerful. Because by killing each other, they make themselves even stronger, but they can bring themselves back just by evoking whatever tithing system that they are known for. So Zivu feeds off of war. Savathun feeds off of trickery and lies. And then Oryx is the Taken King, so it's knowledge. And knowledge
Well, first
stems from,
navigator.
the first navigator. So knowledge and the navigator come from Ayat.
Yeah.
And
And
Ayat, the word Ayat means this ever, it means a lot, but it means basically the insatiable hunger for knowledge no matter what, and it consumes you. And inevitably, it will consume you.
And so that was that whole f series of entries made it sound like the Hive could forever be brought back from the dead. They were not true, because it called them true deaths, and that really irritates me because they were not final deaths. They were true deaths in the
Right.
sense that he truly killed them and thus was more powerful. But they were
Right.
not final deaths. And this is later actually confirmed, like five entries later in This Love is War of the Books of Sorrow, where the narrator is Zivu. And so it reads, Zivu upon Oryx, uttered by Zivu Wrath, sibling of Oryx. Betrayal. We have marooned Oryx within the deep. This is our obligation as lords of the Hive to make war upon each other, to eradicate weakness and make ourselves sharp. Obligations. I once permitted Oryx to kill me so that he could gain the sword logic and overcome Akka, our god. This left me trapped deep in my throne, but Oryx, my brother, made war upon the Ecumen, and in that war described me, for to I am war. Thus I was resurrected. So,
There you go.
resurrected in the sense of she was trapped in the immaterial realm of her throne world to the material realm of reality. And
There you go.
so we actually see this act in game in the Dark Below, where we have to kill, what was it, the hand, the eyes, the
Yeah. So
heart.
Crota was trying to come into our reality,
Yeah, come
because
back
he
in.
was locked in. Come back into our reality because he was stuck in his throne world. And the only way to do that was through using the hive to the wizards or whatever. And
Yeah.
they, do their little ceremony, evocation or whatever. And we would have to, and pieces of him started to come into our
Yeah.
universes. And then all the pieces of the puzzle basically would make Oryx. Well, we stopped that from happening. And then we went down into the throne world and then stopped him
Well,
from
so
happening.
like Oryx is the first navigator, Savathun is trickery, and Zivu is war, Crota was named the Eater of Hope. And so his ritual was like, it's been centuries since the Hive have been on Earth. Here they come. They're fighting back. Like, hope is lost. The Hive are back and they're here to kill you. Look, there's his heart. There's his, just like you said, there are these like pieces of him that are rising in power now. And it's like, if you don't take care of this immediately, he will be back. And we did stop his return. And then in Crota's end, we stopped. We killed him with a final death, just like we did Oryx.
And the only way to kill the hive gods is in their throne world, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So Oryx's throne world was the Dreadnought because he turned his inside out, and they even had a holiday named after that. And then Savathun's is in her, which we just recently had, which was her big throne world that was up in the sky of Mars, because she turned it into a ship, much like her sisters, or much like Oryx. And then Zivu Wrath we have yet to see, but we know about Crota's. Because we had a whole raid behind it also. That was the first one. Which Protus is the really interesting one because we had
Yeah.
Tolan. And so he's like a scary he's like a scary key that we left down in there.
Well, I mean, he found his way out. He's in the Sea of Screams now.
That's the scary thing.
And of course, after we say how Hive death is final in certain circumstance, the very next entry, A Sword and Edge, is narrated by Nokris, in which he explains his heresy.
Do you want me to read this one?
If you'd like to, please.
Yeah, sure. So this is narrated by Nokris, and this one's kind of crazy because We know about Knockers now, so we know like what his whole deal is. But this one is cool when you read it with that 2020 vision of, today.
Yeah.
So, a sword and edge, a phantasm of the hive, forbidden and sacred, trespassing into the hidden and unwelcoming places. It leaves behind a calcified fragment to mark its passing. Here is what is taught to the hive, from the basest of thralls newly made, that we can be destroyed, we must be destroyed. What cannot be destroyed will surpass infinity. Therefore, it is not best to destroy. Only by testing can the truth be found. Only in destruction can the invincible surpass the mortal. Commit the violence, and you are part of that greatest ambition to create some ultimacy which perfects the universe. That which is built on your sacrifice, with your bones as foundation and your blood as the mortar, is yet part of you. In this way is transcendence achieved. Every belief creates heresy. I tell you this in duelist regard. I made that heresy. It was my hand that fashioned the hive from the marrow of their predecessors, and it was my voice that whispered this in time. That was much as the hive were uplifted by the worms, so too were those worms uplifted by the hive. If they were so weak they needed us to live, this ancient logic and infinitely sharpened edge should have left them behind long ago. Do you think I did not see this? My father's worm did not tell of me of only swords. It had vast things to say, painted in cosmos and shine and gore, truth and fiction. I look forward with three clear eyes and choose the path of the sword to cut open our future, to reach the stars. First one must crawl out of the ocean, and it is, oh wait, I read that wrong. To reach the stars, first one must crawl out of the ocean. It is a question of priorities. This is not regret. This story I tell you, it is but a ripple. The whisper of ideas beyond swords is here to stay. I have ensured this, even among us. Such things die by slow inches, excruciating and unquiet. Possibility remains a secret woven into the blank spaces of dogma. That what was defeated may rise again. That the shape of all shapes is not yet settled. That the worm needs the hive more than is reciprocal. Even between the lines of the Sphinx of Sorrows himself, this is written. This was written. So, just real quick, you put, so like you said, so like the hive are raised to believe that.
Oh, on my note on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
What
hiver
did you?
raise, if you open it's the whole thing. I did a small summary on this. The hiver raised to believe that which can be destroyed must be destroyed, and that which cannot be destroyed will surpass infinity. Knockers explains that if it is true, then the worms needing the hive to survive proves they didn't deserve to exist in the first place. Using this justification, Knockers spearheaded necromancy, a forbidden art of the hive.
So
This was like the only entry that I was like, none of this is this can be summarized. The other ones needed to be like fully read.
and to be honest, Knockers kind of speaks weird. As you can see, I was stumbling all over the place and getting the inflections wrong. But
Is it not just?
it's like he's trying to be Shakespeare, but not really doing a great job of it, because he's. Anyway, the cool thing about Knockers in this whole story arc is Knockers was the banished son of Oryx. So we had Crota and then we had no Knockers, both sons of Oryx. We didn't know about Knockers for years and years and years, or we knew he existed some way, but we didn't know what that meant. And then later, way on later, we discovered in the Dreadnought. There were two statues on the doorway to see Oryx. One of them was named, and our ghost even scans it. And the other one, the name was erased. And so we very much know that one was a statue for honoring orcs, I mean Crota, and the other one was a statue of basically saying, Nokris, here's his, placeholder, but he meant nothing because he committed the ultimate sin in Oryx's eyes, which was necromancy, or in the hive's eyes, period.
I think it is more so Oryx specifically though. Like
Yeah,
it's the
because like
fanatics of the
Savathun
sword
came around.
logic. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's Oryx and by proxy, if Oryx is for it or if Oryx is against it, so is Zivu, but Savathun's a free thinker.
Yeah.
And so the last line there, even between the lines of the Books of Sorrow themselves, is this written, talking about how we're being lied, how the Hive are being lied to. And so in the Books of Sorrow entry Dreadnought, there's a section here, saith Oryx, go out into the universe, my court, gather tribute for me, send it home to my ship. When I call you, walk up that tribute to my court. I prepare for long voyages. And then in parentheses, almost as if between the lines, I am Savathun Insidious. And then back to Oryx. Into the war. I graffiti this notice for you. Into the deep. These books are full of lies.
Yeah, there you go.
And so,
Yeah.
because right there, Nokra said, well, if sword logic is so accurate, then why are the worms alive? They need us. They need
Right.
us to survive. The hive could survive without the worms. They just wouldn't live forever. They would die a natural life cycle.
Right.
It's so.
Yeah, so like, what if you're wondering out there in if you're wondering like what was Nokris's deal is the hive needed the worm and they needed to feed to propel the sword logic to gain power by killing each other over and over and over again. And Nokris said, nah, y'all don't gotta do that. We just resurrect shit from the
Yeah, which is interesting because it makes it sound like when the hive are killed, they because like when they actually are killed, they kind of burst into dust. But is that just game reasons? Like like
Yeah.
where does the line actually fall? Because their armor is made of chitin, so in theory, are they too like made of a chitin? They're supposed to be like a krill species, right?
Early back on, so here was my like explanation for that is you know how like there's the throne world and if you die you go to your throne world? I kind of thought of it like the same way, like the hive dies and then just like the part of the hive that's really the hive goes right back. And now that we know more about like the calcified and chitin, it's probably the armor is just made out of what they use to shape or to calcify to armament themselves, And so that the reason why that falls down is because that's what they calcified out of the universe to plate themselves in protection. Does that make sense? Because if you look at them, you have the thrall, the acolyte, the knight, the wizard, and then bosses, and then of course, the ogre. But if you look at them as they go up in their hierarchy, they get more and more chitin.
That's true.
The wizards have really like crazy looking, awesome chitin all over the body. So much so that they look like faces of their own race, just kind of like in stone on themselves.
And the Lucent Hive probably have the most chitin of all. Like they have like all the
Yeah.
flair and crap with it. You know,
Yeah,
it's even
spikes
more.
and points. Yeah.
The cat's freaking me out. It's not moving.
Uh-oh. Throw something at it.
Didn't care.
Funny, dude. Ooh.
That's Magnus, by the way. So the next entry is The Art of Symbiosis, which is a great entry title. And before I read this entry, I'm going to quickly read an entry from the Books of Sorrow, which talks about this race. So
Okay.
it's fire without fuel. It's a verse 3:3, fire without fuel. I killed my sister today. She came to this star to oversee the extermination of all life here. The Kugu are a strong power, and their fleets protect four nearby stars. As herd animals, they are loyal and stubborn, but they do show grace. For millions of years of evolution, the Kugu have been infected with a virus so insidious that it wrote itself into their genome. The virus compels them to offer their limbs for amputation by enormous sessile jaw beasts. They venerate these beasts and treat them as gods. The virus converts Kugu cells into eggs, which from which strange crawling things pupate to live within the jaw beast's gut. In turn, the jaw beast extrudes sweet nectar for the Kugu to drink, and they have brilliant visions. Savathun and her broods have liberated the Kugu from the jaw beasts, and indeed from existence. But as they chase the Kugu arc ships, I stopped in to vaporize my sister's warship and a few of her underlings. I want to dwell on the ruins a while and punish Savathun for failing to guard her flank. They are like us, these Kugu, bound in symbiosis. I feel joy and sorrow. I feel them as titanic things, because I am larger than my body. My mind is now a cosmos of its own. I know more joy and more anguish than the entire Kugu race could ever experience. Sorrow, because we have killed so much, 18 species in this century alone, and joy for the same reason. Joy that we have put down these blights, scoured them away, and left the universe clean, ready to move towards its final shape. We are wind of progress, ripping parasites from the material world, for if they were not parasites, we would be unable to kill them, and they would still exist. And what is that final shape? It is a fire without fuel, burning forever, killing death, asking a question that is its own answer entirely itself. And that is what we must become. Yeah, that's Ayat right there. Answer that is itself. My worm grows fat and hungry, and I feed it with whole worlds. My astronomers tell me they can sense the deep itself, and that we are conquering our way towards it. I think joy and sorrow are the same thing, like love and death. And so I wanted to read that whole thing, because in all of these entries, these first few entries here, where they are directly referencing another entry from the Books of Sorrow, maybe it's not the exact one, but it's like, okay, we're talking about the Ecumen. Let's look into more Ecumen stuff. The Ecumen are also have references to final shape. So all of these entries here are like 6 degrees of whatever. They're like 2 degrees away from referencing final shape. Every one of these entries so far, they're very right there, you know? And
I will say this. I will say this real quick, just the way Bungie has worked in the past is that, you know, they very much cemented a lot of things in Grimoire. And then as the years went on, they just expounded upon them.
Yeah.
So this is how we get here.
And I forget who said it, but, you know, that was a very early interview thing, like in like year two of Destiny, where they were like, they want to plant seeds. And it's like, who knows when that seed will finally grow. And the Kugu and the Ecumen, they were kind of, whatever. There you go. Here you go. Because that was it. That was the entry. That's all we had on the Kugu from Taken King to now. That's like, what, 6 years of time between then and now?
Yeah, exactly.
And then now in Inspiral, we have another entry about them. And I feel like it reads better reading this entry first, because you have like the outside looking in on who the Kugu are, where it's like, these guys are fucking crazy. Like, they're offering their arms up to jaw beasts to get high.
It says in the title of this, the art of symbiosis. Mm-hmm. So that works in symbiosis with their, you know, huge snake beast that they're feeding off of and feeding and giving power to. But the really cool thing, you know, that you pointed out was, you know, the very telling of Ayat from the Books of Sorrows. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's just so cool how they love to embed these things that all come from one thing. So I have the quote real quick, and I'll just read it. So this is per Seth Dickinson. He wrote this a really long time ago, because people are like, what the hell is Ayat? What does that mean? And so this is his seed, you know, early on in Grimoire. and to tell us, this is where we're going, like, and we'll watch it grow. So Ayat is, this is written by Seth Dickinson. So its mission is to draw in the mind and make an incision of curiosity, and to be that incision, which is a question and its own solution, to make one hunger for an answer whose answer is its own wanting. Ayat, this is it. It is that utterance. And so that's Seth Dickinson's poetic way of just saying that, Ayat is that thirst for knowledge, and knowledge meaning like learning and understanding your universe, that hunger, that insatiable need to know why the hell you exist and where everything came from, just like the race that created the witness. So we learned in that story cutscene that the race that became the witness needed more. They had this perfect universe. It wasn't enough. And so they sought out to understand it. And by doing so, they were uttering Ayat, and that's how they became themselves.
Ayat is because we attribute it to the hive, like it's centrically a hive thing, but it's clearly not. It's more of a darkness thing. Just like
Exactly.
the O blank mine utterance
Yeah.
is it was attributed to Ahamkara when it's actually an invocation of power. Once again, I think actually
Yes.
attributed to the darkness, but in any case,
Yeah, that's perfect.
and so then this is the entry of Inspiral talking about the Kugu. We just saw the outside looking in. Now we're gonna have a member of the Kugu race narrate this entry. A trance imagining of darkness, sweet like honey, a life refracted through another's eyes like splintered light. It leaves behind an imperfectly translated data fragment to mark its passing. Anyway, beloved sibling, if you want to catch me while I'm wearing this form body, you'll need to come home in the next couple of cycles. I don't mind if you prefer to wait until I'm down by the untranslatable among our ancestors, but you might get a different sort of chat. I'm excited about it, genuinely. I still hear from our parents, from our great parents, distantly in my night trances. And there are those nectar-made moments, you know the ones, when you turn your thoughts to the darkness and just listen, and the long sum of Kugu history graven there reflects dark, comforting advice. I have lived out my life with the tenebrous warmth of our ancestors over me, like a cloak atmosphere between us and nothingness. And nothingness. It's different. It's distant. I've drunk of the nectar a few times in the last cycles, and I touch briefly that concurrence of us all, and more, I think it's time to be a part of it. I want to know the truths our ancestors keep close, and it is my turn to guide the future's children. I know we argued the last time we spoke about it. You thought I was moving too fast forward toward aging metamorphosis, but I really just think you've been away from home too long. Don't take it as my urging to get on with the next stage of your life. Just take it as I miss you. Funny, isn't it? How can you miss someone when you know they're always in the dark? I close my eyes. And in the warm nest tide of sleep, I know you are real and happy and out there on some other part of the world, far from the river, far from the untranslatable, where our ancestors' dream exist together. But it isn't the same as having you near, knowing your truth is under the same stars, being able to simply turn my head face bloom and ask your opinion. Dear sibling, come home. Live in my house and let me dream exist close to you again. Whether in this shape or the new one I will take on, I will not be the same, but which of us ever is? You are not the same as you were as a child either. No matter the form of existence, I will love you. A fucking crazy race. And since those are the two entries that kind of look back at the races we've heard about but never actually saw, it just feels like is Bungie trying to kind of like prep us like post Light and Dark, we're gonna start seeing some new shit. I really want to start seeing some new shit. I want to see the people who are amputating their limbs and getting high. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, this is interesting because there's an old thing called, have you heard of the Lotus Eaters?
No, I
Okay,
think.
so there's this thing. So the Lotus Eaters was in Greek mythology. There was this race of people that live on an island that was dominated by a lotus tree, a plant whose botanical identity is uncertain. The lotus fruits and flowers were primary food of the island, and it was a narcotic. It caused them to sleep in peaceful apathy, and after they ate the lotus, they would forget their home and loved ones and only long to stay with their fellow lotus eaters. Those who ate the plant never cared to report nor return. So this is like this cool thing that happened, and where it came from was the Odyssey of Homer's epic poem. He was on his big long voyage, and he stumbled upon these lotus eaters.
Okay.
And so it's really cool because I only pointed out because we've brought this up in the past. Long, long, long time ago, like, what the hell are the ghosts about? Why are we here? Why do guardians exist? And we thought of early on, we
Careful.
thought of this idea. Yeah, I
Don't
know. I'm sorry.
do
I'm not going to. I'm
it.
just going to
Okay,
say,
sorry.
like, early. This is early on. This is D1 when we
Okay,
had this
okay.
theory. We had this theory that what is the flower? What does that mean? Why are we talking about that? And here you've got a line, head, face, bloom. Right.
And that's what I mean by like
So,
Pikmin creatures.
yeah. No, you're right. You're right. So you got that too. But like, what is the ghosts doing for us? It's helping us achieve our conduit through the light and keeping us alive and stuff, so on. So we have a very symbiotic relationship with our ghosts and how we tithe to the light. Or I shouldn't use the word tithe, how we are connected to the light.
Good save.
Yeah, sorry. So anyway, long story short, too late. The Lotus Eaters was a cool little analogous thing that we could use as a parallelism for how we have enemies and guardians in game who are basically, we're kind of like stuck with our light. And the enemies of us were stuck with the darkness. But now we kind of know that both the light and the darkness come from the same place, and you can't really have one without the other. And just to exist in period means that you're trapped by existence. And so it was kind of neat because the Lotus Eaters was a nice little story that kind of summarized how everybody's feeling this same kind of doom and gloom about just we're stuck, we're here, but at the end of the day, we keep feeding ourselves so that we will be happy and satiated because we need to exist. And so anyway, I thought in this entry of Art of Symbiosis, it's not just telling you about a race of people who do this really cool thing. It's kind of like telling you a little bit more about yourself.
This really cool thing.
Yeah.
Just knowing what this really cool thing is really makes me think, you think that's really cool?
Yeah.
If your friends fed their arms to a jaw beast, would you? No.
I mean, I guess it depends. Would you grow more arms? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, they are a plant. They're plant. I
They're
can't help.
planted within, yeah.
I can't help but feel like they're plants. If one of the words to describe their head was bloom.
Yeah.
In any
Right.
case.
Any case, so that's why that word keyed into me, because it's in, it's in parentheses, head, face, bloom. We know about the garden, we know about the flowers, they go on forever, the red flowers of everything, and la la la. So it's kind of neat because they also bracket dream and exist, which is a lot to do with how we know the sky and the deep, they dream and blah blah blah, and it's all about existence, this e eternal struggle for existence. So Anyway.
Would you like to read the next one, or would you like me to read it?
Yeah, I can read it. Oh, this one's The Dark Below.
Throwback.
Yeah, okay. All right, cool. Yeah, so the narrator is Eris Morn in this one. The Dark Below. So the Dark Below, a nightmare of Luna, of that which waits below, of disaster and wreckage and inexplicable warm camaraderie. Tangled together, it leaves behind a journal page with familiar handwriting to mark its passage. Six of us went down into the pit, and only one crawled out. That is how it was, and that is how it is. I have not wanted to look back at that time, but lately it has become prudent to examine what is and is not known of the darkness. I know darkness. I have been trying to distinguish the darkness from the framework the Hive used to shape it for long and long, but they are deeply intertwined. The voice in the darkness answers some things, but not all. I think the great disaster, what did we know? Was there anything besides terror and the swords of the Hive? I think, what was in the pit? The lunar pyramid was there all along, as we now know, since the collapse. Its darkness has seeped into Luna, into all that surrounded it. Could one write a treatise of subspecies of Hive on the differences between various plates of chitin? Have the Hive been here long enough, overrunning our Luna, that a recognizable change in them has evolved? I digress. There were times deep in that dark pit when I thought, ah, Psi means to break left. And then she would. Knives like lightning, as true if, oh yeah. As true as if she herself had told me she would. Or, ah, there is Omar beside me, and though he was not, his presence rang comforting in my ears like struck metal. Synergy, I thought, the closeness that combat creates. We were pinned together in the dark, and so we learned to read each other perfectly, for to do otherwise would have been to die sooner. Anecdata, perhaps. Always the quiet voice that says to temper my expectations, that is a wishful thinking to imagine that they lie beside my heart instead of nightmares floating in my wake. But in this time, all of this lingering, I am sure of what I felt then, not only necessity, not only the edge of the blade. I know more of darkness now. It is not violent. It is something more, something that hums and flows and resonates, knife or song. By equal measure. I have not been able to bear the sound of silence since that time. Too long among the screaming hive, I thought once, now. Cacophony is almost a comfort.
So I've noticed this. Usually when lore entries have this, they have like a different style of text, and I would have made note of that in our notes here. But when you were reading it this time, it finally clicked for me. Each one of these entries, a dream of worlds and unity, millennia gone by, alien and familiar all at once, it leaves behind a data fragment to mark its passing. That's how the first entry begins. Second one,
Yeah.
a phantasm of the hive, forbidden and scared, sacred, trespassing into the hidden and unwelcoming places. It leaves behind a calcified fragment to mark its passing. And then our artist symbiosis, a trance imagining of darkness sweet like honey, a life refracted through another's eyes like splintered light. It leaves behind an imperfectly translated data fragment to mark its passing. And that imperfectly translated is the form, body, cloak, atmosphere, head, face, bloom, dream exists of it. And then now in the dark below, a nightmare of Luna, of that which waits below, of disaster and wreckage and inexplicable warm camaraderie tangled together. It leaves behind a journal page. This is what made it really click. It leaves behind a journal page with a familiar handwriting to mark its passage. So I want to get a little meta. What are these?
Okay. Where are they?
No, what are these? Are these true? Are these true things that we're reading? Are these false?
Oh, I mean, that's a good question. Also, I read camaraderie completely wrong because I was just on a roll.
I No shame.
I forget that Hive some I forget that Eris sometimes actually talks like a human and she's not saying all the words that we're used to in
Yeah.
game.
Camaraderie.
Camaraderie. I was thinking I was just thinking some like cryptic like
Yeah. That's
yeah,
not even
Eldritch
English.
term.
It's
I
Hive
know.
language.
Yeah.
But so
Sorry about that, chat.
we find these entries in the raid of Root of Nightmares. Like, could these be real? Could these be like manifestations made real of things that like,
Ooh, wait a
like
minute.
where do these come from?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. So, what if, because when the traveler shot the beam of light across the pyramid ship that we found
Ooh.
Nezarak, what if this is a sliver of a memory that was embedded in our universe by Eris at one time when she was having her whole thing? And so like this just kind of like is out there, but we know like I don't know. There's got to be some kind of like little tangible explanation for how we get this. Because also, very early on, when we first had Destiny 1, we would go on ghost hunts where we would find dead ghosts. And when we found dead ghosts, they were ghost fragments. And when we opened the ghost fragments, they were memories and whatever happened with that ghost that got them there, or whatever was
That
remaining
was the assumption.
of, yes,
Yeah.
that was the assumption. What if there's more to this, like calcified fragments, ghost
Well,
fragments?
that was one of the things here. I think it was the
Yeah.
second one. It leaves behind a calcified fragment to mark its passing.
Yeah.
So
Interesting.
all these things are leaving behind items, physical items, imperfectly translated data fragment, calcified fragment, data fragment
Journal
again.
page.
A journal page, and then in our next entry that I'll read, leaves behind a delicate data lattice, which is what we collect, right? That's what
Dex.
we collect
Yeah.
on
Yeah.
Nessus.
Yeah. Yeah.
It leaves behind a delicate data lattice to mark its passing. So where are they passing from? Like, where are they passing to? Like, you know,
Just
like.
maybe just pockets in our portaled universe that we exist in, our soul system. You know, like these are little pockets of happenings that, you know, there was a really cool, I love these, there's these ones that happen. So like when shit, I hate doing this sometimes, but it's necessary for this one thing. So anyway, when a ghost fragment happens, it's usually attributed to some great event or some sacrifice or something that happened that left a stain or a mark or a hard imprinted happening in that moment that we are able to channel into and see. Just like how the Hive make runes on the ground to evoke things into our universe. Well, think of that in the backwards sense. Like if you sacrifice yourself, just a little bit of a spark is left. And that little bit of a spark that was left, if you don't have a ghost, it's always going to be there. And so there were these early items that we had in Destiny 1, which talked about different guardians going to all of the planets that we had back then, and they gave their last full measure. And when they gave their last full measure, they basically imprinted themselves on that. This was my interpretation at the time. There was a sacrifice that they had, and it helped us, gain territory on that particular planet because of some great sacrifice that happened. But that imprint was left there, just like the ominous guardian that was dead at the door to the Hive that we scanned on the moon at the very beginning of all of this. It left behind an imprint, and our ghost was able to like glean some information from that. So my now that we're here way in the future with Destiny many years later, it makes me wonder if, just like we're learning about how the memories are all connected and the veil and la la la, it makes me wonder if we aren't onto something with this show, like we were talking about last episode and the one before, how we've basically got this whole universe that we exist in, and it's been pocketed. And these memory fragments or fragments or these little sacrifices that our characters have in game, people that we know about have in game, or great events such as Ariana if conflagrating herself in the dark below, there was still a spark that we could, unlock that story from. What if they're all connected in some way or not? You know, just like when the traveler shot the beam across the pyramid. And that's yeah. So anyway, and the hive are working the same way with their calcified fragments and other stuff.
And so then this will probably be our last entry, which is good because I think this is the halfway point of the book, so that works out perfectly.
Oh yeah, and that's good. It's a Vex.
It's a good one. It's a really good one, and I think it's probably one of my favorites here. Whenever we get this type of stuff, this is when I get really happy. Brass Gardeners, a specter of the Black Garden, rich with the sweetness of flowers and the stink of radiolaria. It leaves behind a delicate data lattice to mark its passing. And now, so before I continue reading this entry, a specter of the Black Garden, why not read Legend the Black Garden? I am Pujari. These are the visions I have had of the Black Garden. The traveler moved across the face of the iron world. It opened the earth and stitched shut the sky. It made life possible. In these things, there is always symmetry. Do you understand? This is not the beginning, but it is the reason. The garden grows in both directions. It grows into tomorrow and yesterday. The red flowers bloom forever. There are gardeners now. They came into the garden in vessels of bronze, and they move through the groves and rivers of thought. This is the vision I had when I leapt from the shores of time and let myself sink. I
Yeah,
walked beneath the
I love that
blossoms.
entry. I love that entry.
I walked
Sorry.
beneath the blossoms. The light came from ahead, and the shadows of the flowers were words. They said things, but I will not write them here. At the end of the path grew a flower in the shape of a ghost. I reached out to pluck it, and it cut me with a thorn. I bled, and the blood was light. The ghost said to me, "You are a dead thing made by a dead power in the shape of the dead. All you will ever do is kill. You do not belong here. This is a place of life." "The traveler is life," I said. "You are a creature of darkness. You seek to deceive me." But I looked behind me, down the long slope where the blossoms tumbled in the warm wind and the great trees wept sap like blood or wine, and I felt doubt. When my ghost raised me from the sea, there was a thorn cut in my left hand, and it has not healed since. And so people have been attributing that to Thorn,
Yeah.
Drejanyorzan, for
Yeah.
years.
Yeah, that was the early thing. It
And
meant so much more than that.
Pujari was one of my potential candidates for Drejanyor because of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were on that well, I say a lot. I think some really smart people were on that trail at first.
I
But now we
remember
know.
I got. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say now we just know so much more about Thorne.
I remember I got into an argument with someone who, when I was saying, like, I think Drejanyor might have been a warlock. And they were like, "Slam, Cloak of Drejanyor. That means he's a hunter." And
Yeah.
I was like, "That doesn't mean shit. That
Yeah.
anyone could actually wear a cloak in game." But if you actually looked at
Yeah.
cloaks in D1, like a lot of the thematic cloaks that were like, okay, this cloak came from this raid, the cloak and the warlock robes were the same thing. One was just on your back and one was across your whole body. That was like
That's
the
funny.
only difference. So I was like, the fucking warlock, and it was
Yeah.
the cloak of Drejanyor because he like ripped it off or some shit. I don't know. He's a nudist
Yeah.
now. But and I was like, it's Pajari, it's Holand, it's someone, it's not a
Yeah.
hunter. And then it was a Titan,
Yeah.
so everyone was wrong.
And it was a Titan. I know everybody's wrong. Freaking Rezul Azir. Yeah. I think that was so good. That was
It
so good.
was really subverted expectations.
Yeah.
And so then this is the entry. This is a nightmare to read, but I'm going to read it anyway. I suggest reading it
Go for
yourself because everyone reading it themselves, I mean to say, because you might be able to absorb the
Yeah.
information a little better. Garden state, neutral. Garden and gardeners equals equals root and branch equals equals leaf and flower. I'm not going to read it like that. That's a nightmare. I'm just going to read the words.
Yeah.
Intrinsic, inextricable, inescapable. Anomaly. Anomaly one equals leaf invasive. Garden state, active. Gardeners attend. Case, irrevocable. If irretrievable injury, garden and gardeners. And threat persistence, then escalation, escalation. Anomaly status. Present, tracked, new. No archive referent. Simulation failed. Damage 0.3332%. Recoverable. Danger. Recovery projection irresolvable. Repeat. Set. Irresolvable equals recoverable equals irretrievable. Anomaly. Anomaly zero equals infinite witness. Archive data retrieved. Zero equals infinite witness equals a seed was planted here. Recorded referent. Black heart. Zero. Seed. One. Danger. Simulation breaking, visibility narrow, fractals disintegrating, anomaly zero, absent, anomaly one, danger, remaining, garden state, acting, gardeners in unison, extirpate, anomaly one, there is a majestic thorn, the anomaly is gone, the guardian is peaceful, the garden, not the guardian, just in case. It
Yeah.
is known, seen, predicted that a primary function of irresolvable, irrecoverable presences is to trample, flowers growing, damage repairing, threat unresolved. Function called, escalation, iteration. Function, winnow. Function, simplify. Function, flatten. The first defense is offense. So I'm so glad that we got to this one today because I teased it at the beginning of the show when I said, why are the Vex here? And it's like the Vex are here because they might, it sounds like they began in the garden, and they were mostly peaceful. They were just gardeners. They were just doing their thing. And then the witness came in and
Yeah.
fucked up their shit. And they're like, we gotta go kill everything now and simplify it because this is not okay.
That's a good one. Holy
And
shit.
I wonder if there's any possibility that this happened in conjunction with Oryx throwing Crota. With Crota cutting a hole into the Vex world.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. 100%.
Like the witness
100%.
jumps in, does this, and then the very next step is Crota cutting it open, and the Vex are like, let's go, gotta flatten.
Yeah. And remember, he was tricked by his sisters to do so.
Yeah. And they, well, no, he was tricked by Savathun.
That's what I meant.
Oryx, he was tricked by Oryx's sister to do so by being inspired by his sister to do so.
There you go. Well, because he was locked in the throne world, but the other two were there with him. The what were they called anyway? But yeah, they basically convince him, hey, you need to cut a slot. And when he did that, the Vex came pouring out. So that was on purpose.
Yeah, no, Savathun did it on purpose, absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely on purpose.
Yeah, so the witness planted the seed that became the Black Heart, and the Black Heart was the attempt at becoming the veil. So the witness was trying to create a synthetic veil.
Interesting.
That's fucking crazy to learn about, right?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And unless, do you have anything else that you want to say about this entry or any of the others?
No, that's it. I've got a lot to think about now.
Yeah. And I hope everyone else does too. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. We're going to be back on, what is it going to be, August 6th. And we're gonna do part two of In Spiral. We're gonna go through the rest of this book, and just as like a little preview, in case you haven't read it for whatever reason, and you're not going to read it before we come back to talk about it. The narrators of the next five entries are a surviving ghost, or not a surviving, the surviving ghost of the Kentark Three fire team, the guardians who went into the Black Garden and ended up killing each other after one of them got stasis. Marasov, a disciple who is long dead, potentially a disciple of the Witness, potentially an Ahamkara, and the final two are unknown. The first of them possibly being multiple of the races beings within the Witness. It sounds like they're conversing with themselves. So it's like they're not perfectly one. And the final, also unknown, possibly the Witness, but also possibly a person who would become the Witness, like before they had. So it gets like very into like the religious beliefs of the people that inspired them to winnow themselves to become the Witness. It's very exciting. This is like it's knocking it out of the park for part two here. This book is great. We'll be back on August 6th, like I said. If you want to find out more about us at Loose Cannon Show, as it's spelled down there, you can find us on Twitter. Our pinned tweet is to our link tree. You can find us everywhere that Spotify for podcast, po podcast for Spotify, Spotify for podcasters. It used to be Anchor. It's not Anchor anymore. That was easier. Wherever that puts everything out, that puts everything out in a lot of places. And you can find us on YouTube as well. That's a different thing. Anything more?
That's it.
All right. Bye,
Bye.
everybody. Magnus, say bye.